Hello and welcome. It is National Surrogacy Week, and the theme for this year is to focus on children that are either born through or are involved with surrogacy. I've got a panel of guests here today, and we will be talking through some of the legal aspects and some of the altruistic aspects of surrogacy. And I'll just go around the panel and just let everybody introduce themselves. Natalie, can we start with you, please?
Yes, I'm Natalie Gamble. I'm very passionate about surrogacy. I help on the legal side, running a firm called NJ Law, which specialises in family creation and particularly surrogacy, both here in the UK and overseas. And I'm also the founder and director of Brilliant Beginnings, which is one of the UK's non-profit surrogacy organisations.
Thank you, Natalie. Michael, would you like to go next, please?
Absolutely. Hi, I'm Michael Johnson Ellis. I'm also a huge fan of surrogacy. I'm a parent through UK surrogacy myself to two children. I'm also the founder of my surrogacy journey, Two Dads UK and the Modern Family Show.
Thank you. And last but certainly not least, we have Sarah.
Hello. Yes, my name's Sarah Jones. I have been a surrogate 5 times, and I'm also the head of surrogacy over at Surrogacy UK, which is one of the UK surrogacy organisations.
Thank you, everybody. So what we'll do is I'm just going to cover some topics here, and I will field them to each of you individually. By any means, if you want to weigh in at any point, then feel free to dive in. The first one, I think I'm going to pitch this over to you, Michael, being a parent through surrogacy. How do you feel surrogacy impacts the children created via this method?
Oh, I think it's profound. And I think it's such a wonderful process. And what I'm definitely experiencing now as a dad to a five-year-old is that this little human is so inquisitive to learn where and how she came into this world now. So I've almost got this second appreciation for how incredible surrogacy is, because she's now wanting to learn and know and understand how it all comes together and the mechanics. So I think as an outsider and then as a parent and then seeing how these children that are born through surrogacy then want to learn about, you know, their beginning and their creation, I think it's hugely impactful and important. And I'm loving Tallulah's understanding now. And although the one thing, I have a two nieces born through surrogacy as well, and Tallulah at one point thought that Caroline, our surrogate, was the surrogate for all surrogate babies, because she wanted to ask our nieces, oh, so did you also grow in Caroline's tummy? And they were like, no. So Tallulah just thought Caroline was this wonderful human that was birthing all surrogate babies. So we got past that bit. But once she understood that, she's one of the biggest ambassadors for surrogacy. I think it's wonderful.
And children are great in that sense as well, because at that age, they just have no filter whatsoever, do they? There's no kind of sort of predetermined opinion or anything like that. They just tell it exactly as it is, don't they?
Absolutely.
Has there been any point for you, Michael, where you've kind of, I know obviously it's not the first thing you'd say when you walk into a room with Tallulah, but have there been any points where the topic has come up around how she came to be born, and have you sort of found yourself having to almost correct people or set people straight on some of their opinions or what they've said in the past?
Yeah, and I think we also get this as a two-dad family, and other same-sex families have the same almost second outing almost when you are a same-sex family, but we tend to get it when we're somewhere new and another parent who Tallulah may be playing with their child will often say, oh, go and get your mummy now. Or so Tallulah will correct them that she doesn't have a mummy, but then she always follows with that she was born from a lady who was a surrogate. So she almost answers the next piece for, she doesn't have to do that bit, but she's so aware herself now she's learned something new, she wants to educate other people. But yeah, she definitely, we get the assumption regularly, because we're a two-dad family, and that naturally then normally sparks a second conversation about how we created our family, which can sometimes be annoying. And sometimes it can be great for them to learn more about, you know, how we did choose to family build. But we definitely do get it on a regular basis.
Sounds like Toulouse has got a great sense of pride as well in telling her story. Like you say, she's answering questions before they've even been asked. It's quite clearly that she's proud to tell people about it.
Oh, no, she is, bless her.
Sarah, as a five-time surrogate yourself, I understand you've got children ranging in age, some of which are in their late teens now. How is that kind of translated into later life for your surrogate babies?
Well, the oldest two now are 19 and 18, so they are adults in their own right. But they've been brought up to have a real sense of pride in the way that they were created and the way that they were born. And to be honest, they've grown up with a really good self-esteem, I think. You know, when they were very little, it was very much, oh, I'm very special because I was born through a surrogate. You know, I'm a surrogate baby. And then as they've got older, it's just become, well, not even really, it's a bit of a footnote in their life story, I suppose. It's not the main focus anymore. It's just something that they happen to tell people. You know, it's like a quirky story for them. But for the older ones, it's just so matter of fact. It's just such a non-issue at all, which is really strange because there's lots of feedback that, you know, that surrogate born children must, you know, not know where they come from and things like that. When in reality, they do in the UK, you know, they have good knowledge of where they came from and how they came to be and that openness and transparency. So to be honest, it's sort of created this sort of, not non-issue really for them. You know, being a surrogate baby is the least interesting thing about them now, you know.
Definitely, yeah. There is still a lot of criticism out there, and like you say, Sarah, you know, those that are immersed in this world, it's very much fast becoming a non-issue for everybody. But it is still subject to a bit of stigma and a bit of criticism, and we'll move on to the various aspects of that. Is there anything that you've found particular, Natalie, with Brilliant Beginnings? There is no manual with how these surrogate babies go out into the world and approach these subjects, but is there sort of any particular criticism that you find yourself having to constantly deal with on a daily, weekly or monthly basis from outside groups?
It's interesting, really, because I think the criticism of surrogacy that seems to be kind of present on some social media platforms particularly has only really existed for the last couple of years. And I think it just reflects a really tiny number of people that just have quite loud voices. I think in general, our culture and society in the UK is very accepting of different kinds of families. And although I don't have children born through surrogacy, I do have donor-conceived children as a same-sex parent, and my kids are now 16 and 20, so I've got some experience of raising children and kind of how they fit into the world, and I can see in their lifetimes quite how much things have transformed in terms of just that visibility of different kinds of families. So I think where there is criticism of surrogacy, it tends to be utterly uninformed. You know, people that don't really have any dealings with surrogacy, they imagine what it is or what it's, you know, they fear it is, but actually that isn't the reality at all. So I'm always really keen to show those realities, to educate, to show, you know, what great relationships there are in surrogacy and actually how children grow up with this really positive sense of identity, because they've come into the world in a different way that, you know, like Sarah says, it's a bit quirky, it's a bit interesting, but ultimately it comes from a place of love and collaboration and people working together.
And as we said before, it wouldn't necessarily be the first thing that these people would shout when they walk in the room. You know, as you said, Natalie, your children, they wouldn't run in a room and go, "We were donor conceived, nice to meet you," or something along those lines. With it, as Sarah rightly said earlier, it has become very much a footnote. Sarah, how have you found that? As Natalie said, it's more of a tackling misinformation or poorly informed people with loud voices, because obviously the media loves to jump on a drama a dramatic story rather than a heartfelt or heartwarming one. How have you found that in terms of having to inform the ill or misinformed?
Well, I think there's preconceived ideas about who IPs are and who surrogates are. So, you know, there is this the perception that IPs are all very wealthy and are buying a baby, and that surrogates are very vulnerable and very poor and are doing it for the money. Whereas in the UK, when you're in the community, we know that's not indicative at all. You know, that's not how it is. So we're forever fighting those sort of prejudices. The surrogate community especially are quite offended. You know, we're all quite bolshy, strong feminists. And for us to be told that we are vulnerable and don't know our own minds is really quite offensive, to be fair. You know, and to be sort of told what to do with our own bodies as well, it just goes against everything that I sort of believe as a feminist, and a lot of the surrogate community feel exactly the same. So it, you know, it's trying to get over those small barriers before we even start talking about the children through surrogacy. And the main issue that people have with children through surrogacy is they look at it like adoption, like the babies, when they're born, they suffer some sort of loss for not having their surrogate. When in reality, the children are born into their arms of, you know, most of the time their genetic parents, you know, their intended mother who is probably induced lactation and can breastfeed, or their intended father who has lovely skin to skin contact with them and bonds just like any non-birthing parent does. And so to say that, you know, these children suffer a loss by being born through surrogacy, again, it's trying to educate that actually we know in the community that that's not indicative of surrogate born children, and actually they have exactly the same bonds with their parents as any child born has bonds with their parents. So
it's not backed up by the research. I mean, people like the Centre for Family Research at Cambridge University, who've carried out studies in relation to surrogates and children born through surrogacy, and in the case of one of their studies over a really long period of time, so more than 20 years, all shows that these children actually do incredibly well, and that, you know, they're, you know, being raised as, you know, either as normal as any other children or even better in terms of their experiences of parenting. So this kind of nonsense about children suffering from having been born through surrogacy is just not true, not factually true.
That's it, Natalie, isn't it? I mean, what you've said there is it's not based on any kind of factual evidence. It's based on people's opinions and their conceptions, as Sarah said, of what surrogacy is. Michael, how have you found that? Obviously, you touched earlier on the fact that Tallulah is, you know, she's quite proudly said about how she's been born. But have you come up against any stigma being in a same-sex relationship? You know, you hear about these awful case studies in the past where these just such outspoken groups will come out with phrases like, oh, a baby needs its mother. Have you had to deal with that firsthand?
Yeah, unfortunately. And, you know, the few social media platforms where some of this trolling is rife, unfortunately, it tends to be gay men that also get that attack first as well. When it comes to surrogacy, there is usually an attack on gay men taking advantage of these vulnerable women, as it's worded. So again, we have had experience of that. We still have experiences of that. As Natalie and Sarah have said, you know, part of the work that we all do will continually be to educate people and to make them aware of the incredible studies that have taken place and the results of how these children are thriving. But yeah, we unfortunately do get that, you know, our child needs a mother and all of the other stuff that comes with it. But we can, anyone that knows us or has seen our family, and particularly Tallulah, you know, you can see that this girl is not missing out on anything. This is someone who is fierce, who is thriving, who has female influences around her, in her aunties, her friends. You know, it's absolute rubbish. You know, these kids thrive on the love and the support they get from their parents. End of. And that's what we have to keep doing to show people, to educate, because you can't argue with that. You know, you look you look through a lens into my social media and you'll see that these children are not at any disadvantage at all from not having a birth mother.
Just as an interesting topic there, Natalie, you mentioned earlier that you're a same-sex parent. Have you ever been challenged and said that a baby needs a father?
Well, interestingly, when my daughter was conceived, the law said that. So the law said that clinics had to consider the need of a child for a father, which seems quite remarkable now. But yeah, I mean, my kids will tell you that they've done just fine with 2 mums. And, you know, none of us live in a vacuum, do we? I mean, we all have, you know, other relatives and friends. There's plenty of men and women involved in most children's lives. So, you know, what matters to kids is the connections they have and the attachments and the love that they feel. It doesn't really matter where that comes from.
How many people are raising children by themselves without a mother or a father that weren't born through surrogacy, you know? So, I mean, that's life now. Not necessarily, you know, a home with a mum and a dad and 2.4 children anymore. There's so many different types of family. And children can have bonds with parents, you know, with fathers as much as they do mothers. You know, it's not that we've stopped thinking that now men should just be going off to work and having very little childcare experience, whereas now normal families have both parents or just being as caring as the other one. You know, there isn't the mother's not necessarily more caring than the father or a better caregiver than the father. It's just how families are nowadays, I think.
I think the overall message from that was that there is no template for a quote unquote normal family. I don't think there ever was. And from what you've all said, it sounds like the key message from that is that a child needs a parent. It doesn't necessarily need a mum or a dad. It just needs love and a parent, doesn't it? Natalie, you spoke briefly then you mentioned about the law and how that was challenged earlier for you. How will the upcoming law changes impact children born through surrogacy?
Well, we're in a bit of a kind of waiting pattern for the Law Commission to produce its report in the autumn to see exactly what the final recommendations look like. But we can kind of see the direction of travel from the provisional recommendations that came out a few years ago. And one of the key things that the Law Commission is recommending is to have a system for parenthood at birth for children who are born through surrogacy in the UK. So it means that if everybody follows certain sensible steps pre-conception, that there will be the opportunity for intended parents to be registered on the birth certificate immediately without having to go through a lengthy court process after the birth, which is the current system. And I think that's hugely positive and important for children because it recognises their identity and their security in the right family from the beginning, just exactly the same as every other child who's born not through surrogacy takes for granted. And I think for intended parents, that period of time during which, you know, they're caring for their child, but they're not the legal parents and, you know, the surrogate's still the legal mother and her husband the legal father if she's married, and they could, you know, veto that parental order, albeit that that's something that we hardly ever see happen, creates that huge anxiety and sense of discrimination, I guess, for the parents that actually they've had all these hurdles to have their family and they're still not recognised as parents. So I think, you know, being able to say legitimately to a whole family, yes, you are a family as soon as your child is born, is positive for the parents. And then, you know, following on from that for the child as well, because the parents feel more secure and because the child is legally secure from birth. So I think, you know, you can't overstate the importance of recognizing the right people as parents from the very beginning. And I think that's really, really important.
Thank you, Natalie. As an intended parent yourself, Michael, how did you find that wait period before the parental order was granted for you and your partner?
I think our circumstance, because we had a great relationship with our surrogate and we were obviously all on the same page and you know, we'd been friends for well over 12 months, we just found the wait just quite a frustration. It didn't necessarily make us nervous necessarily because of where we're all at with our journey, but it did, we all found it super annoying. and not most of all, not least of all, Caroline, because, you know, again, you know, surrogates are also completely affected by all of this too. And we just found it all unnecessary. That was the biggest frustration for us. And it was the home visits and having to, you know, jump through those hoops to validate our new child and the fact that our parenting was under a microscope. That was just frustrating just because of how unfair it felt. So obviously the proposed changes, I just think, certainly celebrate equality more when it comes to your parental responsibilities from birth, obviously subject to those, that pathway being followed. And I think that's going to give a lot of people more comfort, surrogates and intended parents.
As you said, it was a bit of an easier journey for you because you had that trust in your surrogate. Sarah, from your point of view, again, as a 5-time surrogate, has there ever been any sort of complications between the birth of the child and the granting of the parental order for you?
I think the only complication has been the length of time it's taken to go to court and for the parents to be granted legal parenthood. And luckily enough, I had a really strong relationship with all of my IPs and the families that I helped create. But it's things like, you know, they can't apply for a passport without your details before the parental order is granted. You know, you're forever thinking, am I going to get a call from a hospital or a doctor that needs my say-so for something? And sort of that hangs over you until legal parenthood is transferred over to the parents. So I think just the length of time that it takes for the real parents to be recognised, it's just kind of like a weight that hangs over you as a surrogate, because you're sort of waiting for that. I feel quite responsible for anybody that I have a legal responsibility for. So for me, the quicker that legal parenthood can be given to the right parents is probably key for me. Yeah.
And I guess, as Michael said, the trust aspect was there. So there wasn't any need for nervousness. We did say that, I think Natalie touched on the subject earlier, that although it doesn't happen that often within the UK, there obviously is always the chance that it's the old media cliche, isn't it? Is that the surrogate may change her mind. The problem is that she is legally entitled to do so. And I think, as Michael said, while that didn't apply to them, there wasn't that nervousness. I guess it is always a kind of an overbearing factor that may happen if the relationship between the surrogate and the intended parents isn't as strong as it could be.
Yeah. Most intended parents worry when they first join the surrogacy community, I think. And then equally for surrogates, we're equally as worried that the intended parents can just sort of walk off without any responsibility to that child whatsoever. So I think people always assume that the surrogate will suddenly look at this baby and decide that they want to keep it, which in reality doesn't happen statistically ever. Whereas for surrogates, it's very much the opposite. You know, the intended parents can walk away at any point without any sort of long-standing responsibility to that baby at all.
And again, I think because we touched on misinformation earlier, and also the comparison, the wrongful comparison, should I say, between the world of surrogacy and the world of adoption. Natalie, do you think that maybe some of this worry for intended parents is born out of the fact that there is misinformation in the media that surrogacy is the same animal as adoption? Do you think that kind of breeds that concern?
Yeah, I mean, I think you do hear of the kind of scare stories, if you like, in the media. But I mean, having dealt with so many surrogacy cases over the years, and believe me, if things do go wrong, I'm probably the first people that someone's going to call. So, you know, when you do get those breakdown of relationships, we would know about it. And they are so, you know, maybe 2 or 3 cases over 15 years of practice. I mean, it's such a tiny, tiny kind of minority. And yet the law is sort of set up almost as if you know, in the 1980s, when they were writing it, they imagined that surrogacy would be kind of such a delicate thing that surrogates would quite often want to change their mind and they should be given the right to do that. But actually, that isn't what happens, and that surrogates go into surrogacy kind of knowing very clearly their own minds and that they're carrying a baby for someone else. So this structure of the law whereby we're kind of defaulting to a position where everything goes really terribly wrong doesn't meet the needs of anybody that's involved in the surrogacy at all. So, you know, I think it's really important not to overinflate the risks. And, you know, it's completely different from adoption. So, you know, for parents who are, I mean, they're just completely different processes. Surrogacy is a means of conceiving your own child and with the agreement of everybody that's involved and your parents immediately from birth or from conception in reality. Whereas adoption is, you know, very much about a child being taken from one family and placed in a different family. And in most cases, that follows often quite a difficult background and reasons why that child hasn't been able to live with their birth parents. So it's a completely different scenario.
There's even that adoption specific phrase that gets banded about in the media all too often of giving the baby up. That must have come up on your radar a fair few times, Natalie.
Yeah, and I'm sure I've heard Sarah say this before as well, that surrogates don't give the babies up, they give them back. But, you know, they were never theirs in the first place. It's a completely different thing.
We spoke earlier about the parental order process. And Sarah, I think you made the point about how if the surrogate is married, her legal partner or husband will go on the birth certificate. There was a recent court case, I believe, where there was a surrogate child born and they wanted to put their biological father, have him named on the birth certificate. Is that something you can elaborate on, please?
Yeah, I think it was a court case very, very recently where the surrogate born child wanted their biological father put on the birth certificate rather than the surrogate's partner. I believe they lost. Is that right, Natalie? Do you know a little bit more about it?
Yeah, it was taken to the European Court of Human Rights. Mm. And yes, they lost because the law in the UK is really clear about children who are conceived through assisted reproduction. So that includes artificial insemination and embryo transfer. It's the woman who gives birth and no other who's the legal mother. And if she's married and her spouse consents to the treatment, then her spouse is the parent. And I think bear in mind with these laws that these were laws that were written to protect parents who were conceiving through donation. So if you're a father through sperm donation and you're married to your wife and you're conceiving at a fertility clinic, you want the law to be very clear that you are the father and the biological father who is the sperm donor is not. So these were not laws that were designed for surrogacy. They were designed for other sorts of assisted reproduction. But the law then creates this mechanism of the parental order to kind of unpick that in surrogacy cases. And when the law was written, it was added on, and we're going back to 1990 now, but it was added on to the law as a last minute amendment. So it was very much a kind of sticking plaster over, you know, we might have one or two surrogacy cases. This is very rare. It's not something we really need to kind of legislate for in detail. And that's the system we've been stuck with for the last 32 years. So, you know, now surrogacy is much more accepted. It's much more common. There's no logical reason why a surrogate spouse should be a legal parent of a child if they don't want to be. It just seems crazy. But we don't have that framework specifically for surrogacy. So that's kind of what we're hoping the new law will bring.
It does sound like a lot of preconception or even assumption, even around the legal side of surrogacy, was put in place way back when. And these are definitely outdated laws that need to be addressed. Michael, how did you find that? I mean, did your surrogate have a husband or a legal partner at the time of the birth of Tallulah?
Yeah, she was married to a man, and he was obviously on board and would consent. But again, just found it, he was obviously on our side and just found it incredibly unfair. And he felt like a huge responsibility because this was something he supported his wife in doing. But in doing so, he had a legal responsibility of our children.
Even with no biological connection whatsoever.
I know. It's just, as Natalie said, it's just bonkers. It's just what other situation can you find yourself in other than this one? So it's incredibly, you know, it's unfit for purpose, isn't it? So we just need to look forward to the autumn slash winter and hope that this runs to schedule and we can see what's in store for us all.
Talking about dispelling myths, one of the things I find is that when you talk to kind of most ordinary people who maybe don't know a lot about surrogacy, they are really surprised to learn that the surrogate and her spouse, who are the parents, they kind of are really shocked that it isn't the biological parents who are recognised as the legal parents. So I think a lot of people in the UK already think the law is the way that we all want it to be. It just isn't.
Yeah. And is that the time Michael mentioned, autumn, winter of this year? Is that the time frame that we have everything crossed for?
Autumn, apparently. So let's wait and see.
But to be clear, that's for publication of the Law Commission's report, and that's not the end of the story. So what happens then is that they will send that report to the government, and the government will then need to decide whether to turn that into legislation and devote parliamentary time to passing it. So, you know, for anybody that's listening to this and wants to support law reform, I think that's the time to, you know, write to your MP and to try and kind of encourage this actually to get actioned and not to, you know, languish on the shelves.
Yeah.
And as a surrogate yourself, Sarah, this must be something that you're keen to see passed through as well, so that you have no legal responsibility for the surrogate baby from day one. Everything's transferred over to the surrogate baby's rightful parents.
Yeah, it'll be a huge relief for surrogates to not have that responsibility. It's not what we go into surrogacy for. We definitely go into surrogacy to create families and to make other people parents. So for that to be recognised at birth will be will be our goal, to be honest, for surrogates in the UK. It's what we go into surrogacy for.
Okay, well, thank you very much to my panel today, Natalie Gamble, Michael Johnson-Ellis and Sarah Jones. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and you found it informative. And look out for other great podcasts for the remainder of Surrogacy Week. Thank you very much.